Okay, when we're talking about God and God's existence, one of the things that we have to be very clear on is what exactly do we mean by this term God? Now, Christians have approached this in two ways. First of all, you can look at general revelation. So you can look at the evidence that comes from the natural world around us. You can look at the evidence that comes from nature. You can look at conscience as well. And one of the things that John Henry Newman pointed out was that conscience almost acts like the voice of God. It is when we go against conscience, we feel shame or we feel guilt. And so he argued that conscience was evidence of the existence of God. So we've got this evidence from nature, we've got this evidence from morality, we've got evidence from conscience. That all comes from general revelation. And so our idea of God must be something that can account for nature, that can account for the world around us. The other way of getting an idea of God is to go to the Bible. And that means going to the special revelations that came to individuals like the prophets, like Isaiah, that came to people like Moses, that came to the psalmist, that came through Jesus Christ. So there's the special revelations that came to individuals that end up in the Bible. And what comes consistently through the Bible is that God is supreme, that God has supremacy, that God is the perfect being. Well, what do you mean by the perfect being? Perfect being means this: it is the greatest being that you can conceive of. You can't describe anything greater than the perfect being. And the Bible is very clear: God is as good as it gets. That's what we mean by supremacy or the perfect being. God is as good as it gets. Another way of putting that, or the Christian way of describing that, limitless loving power. And so by coming at it in two directions, by coming through the Bible or by going through general revelation, the idea is that you get the same picture of God. God is limitless loving power. Well, what does that mean? Well, first of all, God has to be great enough to account for the universe around us. He has to be great enough to create this universe, to describe this universe. So we need an idea of a personal God. A God who's a person, a God with a mind. And it's actually quite easy to get your head around this. For example, we've said that the power that God has must be as good as it gets. Well, the more knowledge you have, the more power you have. If you're free, you've got more power than somebody who isn't free. So the greatest power available is to a God who is personal, a God who is loving, and a God who has no constraints on him. So, to give you a clear idea again of what it means to say that God is limitless loving power, you've all got the freedom to choose. Everybody in this room knows what it means to be free to choose. You all make choices every day. So you decide to listen to the teacher or not listen to the teacher. You go down to the school canteen and you decide whether to have your pizza on its own or you decide whether to cover your pizza with baked beans, which is one of the great mysteries of the universe, why it is that teenage students like putting baked beans on top of pizzas. But you've got that freedom to choose. You've got a choice there. But your choices are limited. I mean, you can choose to come to class. You can choose to make an effort. You can choose what to eat at break or lunch, but you can't choose to fly. You can't choose to disappear. There are limits put on you because you're a limited being. God simply is that freedom to choose without limits. There are no limits in God. It's not just that he isn't confined by a body like you are. God created everything in the universe. God simply has the power to bring about whatever he wants. He's the greatest amount of freedom that you can think of. The only limits that are on God are, first of all, that God can't do nonsense. Now, that might sound like a bit of a limitation, but let me put it to you this way. God can't make a square triangle. He can't make a triangle with four sides. Because the definition of a triangle is something with three sides. And a square triangle is just a nonsense statement. It means nothing. And you're not detracting from God's power one little bit to say that God can't do nonsense. Some people say, oh, you know, Can God make a stone so heavy that he can't lift it? Well, apart from the fact that God doesn't have arms and doesn't go around lifting things, you've got to say, look, that's a nonsense statement. It's like saying, what's the difference between a duck? You know, it just makes no sense at all. So no, God doesn't do nonsense. God, because he's all-knowing, will be rational and will only do things that make sense. So God will only do things that make sense, and he'll only do things that are consistent with his loving nature. God's good. Because remember, God not only has to explain the design of this universe, he has to explain morality as well. God explains where right and wrong come from. God explains why there's good and evil. So God is good. So God will only do what's good. He'll only do what makes sense. But beyond that, there's no limitations in God. He's pure freedom. And you've got a very, very good grasp of what that means. You know, you experience what freedom is. You know what it is to be free to choose. God simply is that freedom without limits. So it's clear you understand the terms. You've got a rough idea. It's something that you experience. God, in one sense, makes perfect sense to us. It's quite a familiar idea that we're using to explain him. God's limitless power is known as his omnipotence. His limitless knowledge is called omniscience. That means that he knows every fact. Everything that's true, God knows it. And the important thing for us to remember is that in the Christian view, God is personal. God is free. He knows things. He can choose things. He loves. God is all the things that it requires to be called a person or to be personal. Right? He's not impersonal. If something is impersonal, it's like a rock or a force like gravity. It doesn't choose. It just acts and reacts. Now, that's not the greatest amount of power that you can imagine. So that's not the perfect being. God is not impersonal. God is personal. That's an extraordinarily important thing to remember about God. The other thing we need to remember about God is that God is both transcendent and immanent. Now, those are two important words to remember. From the Christian point of view and from the Jewish point of view, God is both transcendent and immanent. Now, let me put it to you this way. To say that God is transcendent basically means that God is greater than everything in the universe, and that even though you can understand what the term God means, you can't imagine God. Now, what is that? That doesn't seem to make an awful lot of sense. How can you understand what the term means but not imagine him? Well, if you're going to imagine something, you picture it. You've got to sort of try and picture that in your mind. But while we might understand what it means to exist forever and never have a beginning, whenever you try to picture that in your head begins to hurt. What you might understand what it means, while you might understand what it means to say that God has limitless power, it's very hard to picture, you know, what that would, inverted commas, look like. He's impossible to imagine. You understand the terms. Now, that's no big deal. There are all sorts of things that we cannot picture, but which are true. Physicists talk about these things all the time. Like those little tiny atoms that you're always hearing about in science, they do all sorts of crazy things. Sometimes they appear to be in two places at once. We know it's true, but we just can't imagine what that would be like. We know that the universe, or at least there's extraordinarily strong evidence that the universe began in a big bang. But that's extraordinarily difficult to imagine because, you know, space and time itself began with a big bang. What was it like before there was space and time? That's extraordinarily difficult to imagine. But that doesn't mean that it isn't true. So while it's difficult to imagine God, we can understand what the term means. So it's no big deal to say that God's transcendent. It's not evidence that there is no God to say he's transcendent. It's just part of life. There's lots of things that we can't imagine. Another simple one. When we talked about the soul, we said that the soul, or your mind, is the part of you that is not your body. So that's very clear, very easy to understand. You know that I can look inside your skull and see your brain. You know that scientists can scan your brain inside and out. They can see everything that's happening in your brain while you think. They can weigh and measure your brain. They can see the structure of your brain, but they can't do that with your thoughts. They can't lift a thought out of your head and weigh it and measure it. They can't do that with your feelings and your experiences. Those are non-physical. Now, you understand the terms, you understand what it means, but whenever you begin to then try to picture what a thought actually is, your head begins to hurt. So again, even in everyday life, there are things that we believe in that whenever you begin to try and understand exactly what's going on, your head begins to hurt. Well, God's transcendence is just a bit like that. I mean, he's impossible to imagine, but that does not mean that he isn't real, because you understand what all the terms mean. You understand what God is, and you've got that grasp of God. You know what freedom is. So God is simply limitless, loving power, freedom without limits. If you look at Genesis chapter 1, you go through Genesis chapter 1 and God creates everything. Light, darkness, sky, sea, animals, plants. God creates it all. And the point is, no matter what it is that you see in the universe around you, God is not like that because God made it. The Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, very clear. Don't make an image of God because you can't picture him. God is transcendent. He's wholly other. He's totally different than anything that you experience in this world around you. But the other side of God is that God is immanent. And if you're immanent, that means that God is close. The way the Muslims put this is to say that God is closer to a man than his jugular vein. The Bible puts it that you knit me together in my mother's womb. Where can I go for your presence, says the psalmist. Hebrews and Colossians make statements like, in him everything consists, or everything holds together by his powerful word. The very interesting thing there is that those two passages are actually talking about Jesus. But God holds everything together. He's in control of everything all the time. Now, that's important because when I was 6, 7, 8, I was raised in church with the idea that God made everything. God made the hills. God made the mountains. God made the clouds. Then you come to high school. And you find out that the mountains have been shaped by geological forces, that the hills were made in the Ice Age, that the rivers and the streams are made in the water cycle. And so you're beginning to think, well, the weather cycle, the water cycle, they made all these things. Does that mean that God didn't? Well, there are two senses in which God did make it all. First of all, you can think of God, have you ever seen those big elaborate schemes that people put together with dominoes? They knock one domino and they all begin to fall down in a perfect pattern. You get this great big artistic display. Well, you could say that God set the universe up like that. So God planned every single thing that will happen from the beginning of time. So in that sense, God did plan for the hills to be like that, for the mountains to be like that. So God did make it all. God did plan the weather cycle. But that, while true, does not get you really close to the idea of what immanence means. God's immanence means that God is upholding, keeping the universe in existence from moment to moment. The universe itself cannot exist without God's permission. And God is personally present everywhere, directing everything. Sometimes people use the word omnipresence to describe this, but immanence is much better because it means God is intimately involved with every part of his creation. Now, there's a difference between God and his creation. The creation isn't part of God, but think of it like this. Right next door, there's a music room. If somebody is singing in that music room, you hear their song, you hear their creation. The song is their creation. So somebody goes next door into that music room and they're singing and we're in here and we can hear their creation. While they sing, the creation exists. Their creation exists. Their song exists. If they stop singing, then their creation ceases. And creation is very much like God's song, God at work. If God were to cease operating, the entire universe would cease to exist. God is continually directing everything, interacting with nature, interacting with us. Because remember, we've said that God can speak through conscience, and that God can speak through experiences like prayer, and that God can direct your life. And that's got one important point here. Sometimes the objection is raised to Christians, well, why believe in God? I can't see him. One answer to that is simply to say, well, look at the evidence. Look at the design argument and the moral argument and all those things. But whenever I went to university and came across this term eminence for the first time, all of a sudden I realized that for 18, 19 years I've been a complete idiot. When my friend said to me, I can't see God, my immediate reply should have been, actually, I see God at work right now all around me. You know, God at work in nature, God maintaining the world, God guiding the world. And if you look at the world around you, it is like a work of art. You drive into Armagh every morning, and I love driving into Armagh. You've got that countryside as you drive in, and you see, you know, the sun coming down or the sun coming up in the morning or the evening, depending on what time you're driving, and it's beautiful. Or if you stand by the sea and you watch the waves coming in, it's beautiful. So the world around us is like a work of art. It is like a song being performed. And so if you like, I see God being revealed everywhere, all the time. Now, God is imminent. He's present in his creation. He's guiding it and he's directing it. But he's also transcendent. And God is different than nature. That's a big difference, by the way, between the Christian and Jewish view of God and the more Eastern view of God. When you go over to religions like Hinduism, you begin to get this idea that maybe the universe is actually part of God, almost like God's body, if you like, or something that flows out of God. The Bible says, no, that's not true. Nature is no more part of God than a song is part of the singer. This is a creation. It's something that God has made. It's something that God has produced. It's not part of God, but it's something that he is totally present in.